Meet Reed Lance Rosenthal, rancher, number one best-selling award-winning author, and unabashedly, unapologetically, on the right side of the outstanding issues of our generation. But don't try to fence him in. Sometimes his positions will surprise you, because Reed is definitely his own man, with his own opinions. You might love him, you might hate him, but you won't be able to stop listening. Step over to the right side with Reed.
Happy Saturday, folks. It's Reed Lance Rosenthal on the Right Side Radio. Another week of 2017 has departed, and another week is coming. It's a good thing. The departed week is not so bad, and the fact that there's a week coming, we hope, is a really good thing. We're going to be talking about a lot this morning. I mean, there's a lot going on. What we're not going to be talking about much, other than a couple side comments I'm going to start off with, is Comey, Mueller, investigations, Russia crap, Pola, and all that kind of stuff. Because you know what? I'm sick of it. You're sick of it. And I'm just going to give you a couple of quick observations here as we get started. We're going to be talking about the upcoming special elections. That's a big deal. Excuse me. And you need to get involved. You know, put your money where your mouth is. Your country is on the line, and your family is on the line, and your personal health, safety, welfare, and financial security is on the line, not to mention your freedoms. We're going to be talking about, as I promised last week, pensions, retirement type stuff. And what's happening around the United States, which, of course, the media isn't covering, because all this stuff kind of developed under the watch of, guess who? Oh, yes, Barack Hussein Obama, our friend Barry. Another nice job by Barry. Wait till I tell you about some of this stuff. I'm going to use some specific examples. The belly up, like literally in the last few weeks, of the New York Teamsters pension fund, this pension fund getting screwed over by the California State pension fund, a local pension fund getting screwed over, the Dallas Police pension fund, which went belly up, and I'm going to be telling you the reasons this is happening. Some of this stuff, you're going to say, well, you know, I don't really get a pension. I'm not in a union. I'm not a public employee, although I'm sure many of you are. But this is apropos for your own investment plans, your 401k, any employer plans you might be part of, because what is driving the pensions underwater by $4 trillion, by the way, that's $4 trillion, are also the mistakes that are being made by managers of private funds, managers of your 401k fund through your employer, etc., and you need to be on the lookout for them, or you're going to wind up like some of these poor people in these more public pension funds, which I'm going to tell you about this morning. And it's ugly, and there is no redress, as you'll see, because even the Federal Pension Fund Insurance Agency is going broke. I'll tell you about that. So there is no backup plan. And guess what? You're also going to learn about where pension funds tried to kind of save themselves, and Barack Obama wouldn't let them do it. Huh. Wonder what he had in mind. Maybe federal control of pensions and retirement accounts. You know, a spend and tax progressive who believes in government control of how you breathe, literally. Wouldn't they like to get their hands, and who needs money, because he has to buy votes by doing nonsensical things, right? Wouldn't he or she or anyone like them love to get their hands on the $17 trillion in retirement accounts in the United States? You know, I bet they just lick their chops every night. It might be the last thought in their mind as they go to sleep. Unless it's some other type of thing that is diametrically opposed to American values. But it's, you know, in that realm. And then we're going to talk about We're going to talk about some stats on Muslims in England. And why are we talking about stats on Muslims in England? First of all, those poor people have gone through 3 terror attacks because of their moronic leaders, who are similar in ilk and thought to the moronic leaders we've had, and I use the word leaders loosely, the last 8 years. And if you don't want America to look like England 10 or 15 years from now, pay attention. Pay attention. And then we're going to talk about, you know, it's kind of related to what's going on right now. But it's not really a Comey investigation, Mueller investigation thing. This is something which just came out June 13th. I mean, how close is that? A week ago, right? Less than a week ago. And this is a huge blow-up about surveillance, illegal surveillance, in all sorts of levels, which I'm going to tell you about, by the FBI under Comey, of millions of Americans, including, by the way, Donald Trump and others. And, you know, once again, the media is not saying a squat about it, even though there's been a federal lawsuit filed over it on June 13th, which is when it came to light. You will shake your heads when you hear the dark underbelly of all the surface stuff you've been hearing on the mainstream media. And if we have time, I'm not sure we're going to, because you know how verbose I am. Yak, 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 yak. But if we have time, I'm going to talk to you a little bit about oil prices now and what's coming our way. And I might add that, you know, I do my projections every year at the year end. I think it's the first of the year show. You can go back and listen to them in the archives. It's going to be the first show in January each year. Just type in January, I would imagine, in the search bar, and we'll come up. And I have been, I'll pat myself on the back and offer a caveat. I've been remarkably right on major stuff, unfortunately, in many instances, because the major stuff has not been, for the most part, terrific. However, I projected that oil prices would rise pretty damn steeply over the last year, 2016. They did not. They actually fell for part of the year, came back a little bit, and have kind of stabilized with a little bit of up and down motion. But my projection of much, much higher oil prices will come true. I was off on my timing for a bunch of reasons that I'll tell you about. But where we're going with this, and I'm going to give you the macroeconomics behind it, which are startling, having to do with India and China and the usage of barrels of oil per day per person, et cetera, that's current in India, China, Japan, and the United States, the 4 biggest users of petrol products in the world, and where it's going. It's really some phenomenal statistics. And I think when I get done, you will agree with me. Now, when it's going to happen, I don't know. But it's something you can prepare for now. And if you happen to run your own retirement accounts, which ties in with the other part of this show, you can maybe start investing long-term in fossil fuels. I know that is antithesis to you lefties that listen to me. And thank you for listening to me, lefties who love to hate me. But it is the facts, Jack. Now, I'm going to start off with a little story, because everybody loves my stories. So there is this guy, and he absolutely, positively, without a doubt, has a... And the basis of this story is tomorrow, Father's Day. And I'm really going to come at it from 2 aspects, which I think you'll find intriguing. So there is this young man, and he is in Germany. He's 14 years old. Hitler has come to power. The Third Reich is on the march. Neville Chamberlain is busy giving away Czechoslovakia, hoping to buy peace. A lesson, by the way, for those who believe in appeasement. You know, trying to buy peace can't be done. And this young man's father, a fairly worldly guy, and one of Germany's largest cattle farmers, they don't have ranches over there, they're cattle farms, did not like what he was seeing on the political front. He had read Hitler's book, Mein Kampf. The analogy, by the way, would be Barack Obama's book, Dreams from My Father. And there's other books by other people who have said exactly what they're going to do. The current president of Iran wrote a book in 2002, said exactly what he was going to do to bamboozle the United States. I'm pretty sure Barry and Valerie read the book and made sure they checked all the boxes. But I digress. Anyway, this young man's father had read Mein Kampf. He was an avid purveyor of the news at that time. And he was, to put it mildly, uneasy. And he began making plans in 1937 to get his two children out of the country and to America, where several of his brothers had moved, you know, 10 years before and were flourishing. And he made his preparations and his plans, and he salted away some money from outside the prying eyes of the Third Reich. And in 1938, he sent this young man over to America by himself. Later on, he sent his sister over. And then in 1939, he and his wife managed to get the last boat, literally the last boat, out of Bremen Harbor. And a week later, Germany invaded Poland, and World War II was on. As was the rounding up and the slaughter of 6 million Jews in a variety of concentration camps scattered across Germany and scattered across the Baltic countries. The young man came to America, didn't know any English whatsoever, zero English, and went to live with his father's brother in St. Louis. And, of course, he pined for the farm and the cattle. He was the third generation, land and cattle. And he found out in 1939 that, number one, his parents were finally on the way over. By the way, he worked after school. He was put in the third grade because he knew English. And he had to learn to read and write and speak in English. And he worked after school to help out his uncle with the house expenses where he was staying for the total of, I'm not making this up, $2.14 a week. That's $2.14 a week. And felt fortunate to have a job, I might add. Anyway, he found out that his folks had gotten out of Germany and were on their way over. And he also found out that his grandfather, a decorated German military hero in World War I, in fact, the Iron Cross, which is the equivalent of the United States Congressional Medal of Honor, a major in the Wehrmacht, had been rounded up by the Gestapo and sent to Auschwitz. This is a lot to handle for a 15-year-old on his own in a foreign land, can't speak the language, in third grade in an American public school. A few years later, he joined the army, although he enlisted to go to the Pacific. The Army was savvy enough to realize that he spoke fluent German and had a grudge to carry to boot. And he was assigned to military intelligence. In fact, he was one of the first American soldiers in the OSS, which is the precursor to the CIA. And thereafter, his job was to kidnap high-ranking German Nazi officers and officials from behind enemy lines and bring them back to England for interrogation. He had a team of five that he worked with. Kind of special ops. The special ops of that day. Without all the goodies that special ops have this day. But nonetheless, the same. Well, flash forward. The war is over. He begins to get back into ranching and farming and other businesses. And he has a son. And a daughter. And he was rough and gruff and tough with his kids, particularly his son. But he was also astute. He allowed his son all the latitude, just like his dad had, for him to do just about anything he wanted up to certain, should we say, lines in the sand. He exposed him to all sorts of things. To reading. To ranching. To cattle. To horses. To hunting. To fishing. To certain types of limited travel. To skiing. Now, flash forward another 30 years. The son of that 14-year-old, non-English-speaking, all-on-his-own German immigrant on the eve of World War II and the Holocaust is now a young man who, imbued with all the opportunities, all the exposures, all the experiences which his parents, his dad and his mom, had allowed him to have, was to make life choices. Was ready to make life choices. And at the age of 16, he started his own business. At the age of 18, he bought his first ranch. And et cetera, et cetera. Flash forward another 20 years. The son of the German immigrant now has a son and a daughter. And he treats them just as he was treated by his folks, and they were treated by their folks, realizing that the greatest gift you can give a child is the gift of choice based on the gift of experience. And his son and his daughter began great lives following their dreams, doing what they like to do in a most successful fashion in their realm of endeavor. So you see, I've given this to you from two perspectives. From the son to the father and the mother. And from the father and the mother to the sons and daughters. And it's kind of fitting since Father's Day is tomorrow, don't you think? And that story, by the way, is a true story. Not a made-up story. The young, barely out of puberty, German immigrant who couldn't speak English and worked for $2.14 a week and then kind of began his own empire. And the astute German cattle farmer who got his son and daughter out and got the last boat out of Bremen. And the decorated major in the German army in World War I, who was later exterminated with his wife at Auschwitz. And the young man who bought his first ranch at 18, and his son and daughter. That's my family. True story. That was my great-grandfather, who was a military hero for Germany in World War I, and it was my dad who was the young immigrant at age 14 to St. Louis. And it was me who scraped enough together while going to college to buy my first ranch when I was 18. And it's my son and my daughter who have now struck successful lives of their own. I hope, because me and their mom, who remains a good friend, afforded them the opportunity to make choice and the experiences to make wise choices. So that is my story for today, the day before Father's Day, 2017. And as many of you know, I lost my dad last October, and it's a hole, you know. It's a hole in your life. As I'm sure everybody who is listening to this show has experienced, whether it's family or whether it's friends. So, kind of an uplifting story, but with a somber note, don't you think? Now, let's get into this bevy of news we have for this week. First of all, the special elections. There are four special elections coming up. We won the first one in Montana, as you know. Despite the fact that Gianforte, should we say manhandled, I'll be nice, manhandled a nosy British reporter like 2 days before the election. Karen Handel, who I guess is also on a left-wing hit list, you know, an assassination list similar to that found in the lefty wacko who tried to take out Republican congressmen in D.C. this week. Karen Handel is neck and neck after being 7 points behind in the special election in Georgia. This is to fill Tom Price's House seat. He's now the director of HHS. And she's running against a guy by the name of John Ossoff. Ossoff. O-S-S-O-F-F. And this guy is the progressive's dream of the progressive. He lies like a hot knife through butter. He does not even live in the district that he's running to represent. I just don't understand how that happens. In fact, there was a debate about 2 weeks ago, and Karen Handel absolutely hammered him. She looked at him across the stage on TV and said, "And so who do you plan to vote for?" And, you know, there was nothing he could say because he can't vote. He's not in the district. He can't even vote for himself. I mean, oh my. Anyway, they are neck and neck. There's another special election coming up in South Carolina. The Republican is ahead, but it's close. And then there's several more after that. If you go to the political section down below with the articles, you will find some information on both of these special elections. You know what, folks? Send $10, send $20, send $50, send whatever you're comfortable with, but put some skin in the game. This is not a game. This is your life. You want Nancy Pelosi making decisions for you? You better make damn sure that we maintain we better maintain our control of the House of Representatives. Because remember that they also handle the purse strings of the country under the Constitution. And in 2018, we'll be having discussions about the Senate and the House, because the House folks are going to be up again. And there's many, many, many things wrong with many, many Republicans in Congress. We're going to have a whole discussion on that, too. You know, there's rhinos kind of hiding under every tree. But I'll tell you what. As bad as a rhino is, they're 100 times better than your best progressive. And John Ossoff is a progressive. Make no doubt about it. Just take a look. Google him up. J-O-N-S-O-S-S-O-F-F. Take a look at some of the pictures, who he hangs out with, what he says, etc. The Democrats, there are no Democrats, the left wing and the alt-left have poured more than $10 million into his campaign. That is like by five times more than any other congressional campaign in the history of the United States. You know, they smell the chance to win here. Even in a fairly red district, vacated by a fairly red and very good Congressman Tom Price. So, may I suggest that you take the links, which are under politics, number one, read them, number two, send some money, or volunteer to man the phone lines. They give you that option, too, on election day to get out the vote. And you send those links to at least 10 people and have them send those links to at least 10 people more. This is critical. The election in South Carolina is several weeks away, and the election between Handel and Ossoff is Tuesday. That's 2 days from now. So don't be sitting around thinking about it. There is no tomorrow. And that money to get out the vote and the last-minute advertising campaigns could make the difference. Get involved. Stand up. Now, the next segment, folks, is I'm going to give you a little my take on, you know, you had these shootings in D.C., right? And it was determined like early on, and it just gets more and more pronounced with every day of leaks and investigations, etc., that the shooter was an alt-left nut inspired by alt-left rhetoric. And postulating and posting extreme alt-left views. And yesterday, Friday, they found a list of who he was going to assassinate, all Republican lawmakers, by the way. The FBI, of course, has said, gee, we're not really sure of the motive yet. Okay, whatever. The deep state at work. But the bottom line is that pundits, if you turn on all the TV stations, right, all the radio stations, with the exception of a few, most of the pundits out there, and the so clever, the so smart panel folks that some of these moronic mainstream media types have to, I don't know what, play badminton with discussions, they're all saying, oh, we have to tone down the rhetoric. It's a left and right thing. The right has to tone it down, and the left has to tone it down. And, you know, the right is inspiring violence from its people, and the left is inspiring. This is BS. Crapola. Fake news. Diversion. Saul Alinsky at work. Here's the facts. It is the left that is fomenting this unrest. It is the left that is committing acts of both property and personal violence, including murder and attempted murder. It is the left that is killing police officers. It is the left that is targeting Republican politicians for assassination. And it is the left that is failing to condemn it unequivocally. And it is the left that's continuing to fan the flames. It is not the right. Have you heard about any folks who are conservative lately, breaking windows at Berkeley, tearing the campus apart, attacking a professor at Middlebury, shutting down the schools all across the country, threatening with physical harm so that they have to be exited, speakers who don't think like they do? Have you seen any conservatives attending marches in Washington, D.C.? Forget the fact they're wearing, you know, pink vagina hats. Listening to rhetoric, which includes, I want to blow up the White House, I want to burn down the White House, we are nasty women. Have you heard any conservatives saying we have to take violence to the streets? Have you heard any high-ranking official whatsoever on the right, on the conservative side, saying what Loretta Lynch and Barack Obama said? And by the way, anybody who doubts this, Google it up. March 5th, 2017, Loretta Lynch, and it will come right up, and you can listen to it in her words, promoting bloodshed, violence, resistance in the streets. This is the former attorney general. Now, we all know she's crooked as hell, that she held the value and the rule of law in utter contempt, along with her boss, Barry, and his henchmen. But have you heard a conservative official saying that? Have any conservatives gone out and tried to gun down Democrats? Have any conservative papers published false news like the New York Times tried to do this week, bringing up again that Gabby Gifford shooting, the Democratic congresswoman who was shot in 2011 in Arizona, was the fault of Sarah Palin's campaign ads? Thoroughly debunked. In fact, there was such a hue and cry even from the left, the New York Times had to repost the story. Of course, they played with their words to kind of get out of their hole, but nonetheless, totally fake news. Have you seen right-wing papers doing that? Any conservative papers? Dredging up old fake news and republishing it as current fake news? And condoning in their acts and lack of acts violence? There was an article in the Huffington Post this week by some moron. Of course, the Huff Post is left, left, left. All you got to do is read their stories. They try and make it like news, but their stories are so slanted in how they're presented, what facts are presented and emphasized, and what facts are omitted or de-emphasized, that it's easy to see through if you have half a living brain cell. I guess they think they're being clever. Or they think the public, you and me, are just a bunch of irredeemable deplorables who don't have brains. Maybe both. But this Huffington Post writer said, you know, the only problem, I'm not making this up, you guys, check it out. Go Google it and read it. It'll make you wretch. The only problem with this alt-left lunatic's attempted assassination at the Republican baseball practice a few days ago was that it wasn't organized. He didn't succeed because it wasn't organized. Can't make this stuff up. So I'm here to tell you, after this long and partial list of examples. Oh, yes. Yeah, my producer's gesturing me. Yeah. Have you seen any conservatives marching arm in arm saying, pigs, fry them like bacon, in terms of the police, or marching down the streets of a city saying, what do you want to do to cops? Kill them now. What do you want to do to cops? Kill them now. Have you seen conservatives doing that? How about conservatives getting into fistfights with candidate supporters at Democratic rallies? Paid agitators, it's come out. And I covered that on a previous show. Agitators paid $1,500 an event to go pick fights with Trump supporters at Trump events. Have you seen any Democratic-leaning folks, liberal-leaning folks, talking on TV, suddenly getting pepper sprayed by somebody, by a conservative? No. So I'm here to tell you that these pundits make me sick. Because you know what? This is not a question of the right and the left toning down the rhetoric because the right is instilling violence and the left, and you know, we're all kumbaya and everybody needs to get... BS. The left, alone, on its own, with premeditation, is fomenting violence, hate, and instability in both our social and our governmental fabric. It is the left alone who is acting in contravention of our basic core values of individual liberty, free speech, and the Constitution. It is not the right. The right doesn't have to apologize for anything, and I'm tired of it. The left needs to clean up its act or get its butt kicked. And maybe if a few hundred of these top lefty organizers were thrown in jail for inciting violence or inciting riots, and maybe if the participants, these spoiled, snowflake, worthless children, who evidently did not have fathers like mine, and heaven forbid should be fathers of someone in the future, these worthless snowflakes at these institutions, and the worthless snowflakes who are imparting to them this twisted ideology in the classroom rather than just teaching facts and letting decisions be made, maybe if these violent people were arrested for their violent acts and you threw away the key for a few years, you'd see some tempering. So, that's my take on that stuff. Now, the only thing I'm going to say about James Comey, other than the unveiling of his highly illegal activities for the past 8 years under Obama, which we're going to get to, is I told you that the special counsel would be something that the Democrats rue. I've said this several times over the past few shows. In the last week, it has come to light that A, Mueller, the special counsel, and Comey are BFF, best fill in the term, friends. Number two, Comey testified that Mueller helped him write his written statement for Congress. C, Comey testified under oath also that Mueller, quote unquote, carefully reviewed, unquote, the testimony I am giving here today. Now, you all know what I think of Comey. And I think Comey's acts, you know, support that hypothesis 110%. Now, I'm hoping Robert Mueller is everything that the establishment cracks him up to be. Straight arrow, find the facts, punish those responsible for any transgressions, and play fair. Investigate everything equally. Go where the facts lead you. And not be myopic and on a specialized mission. Given the revelations this week, Comey's testimony, Mueller's involvement in his testimony, which is, by the way, is absolutely a no-no in law. If you are associated with a witness, the witness and you are disqualified, or you are disqualified and the witness can continue. I'm simplifying it, but that's the way it is. So I'm here to tell you that I may have to revise. I'm not going to revise it yet because investigations of Hillary are gearing up. Susan Rice and several of the other treasonous people in the Obama administration are now under subpoena to a House committee. So there's many ways this could still go. And Trump is not helping his case with his tweets. I mean, he needs to keep his mouth shut. And I think the world of Donald Trump in many, many respects. But, you know, engage brain. Focus on your agenda. Let your attorneys focus on the rest. So, I don't know if Robert Mueller and Comey are in cahoots. I don't know if Robert Mueller is... through some back channel in cahoots with the DNC, I don't know, or with the Clinton organizations, or whether he leans right, left, or in between. Hopefully he's a straight arrow in the middle. But D, I gave you A, B, and C, we also learned this week that of the first four kind of top legal assistants, all attorneys, that he's appointed, all, this is all, folks, are politically active Democratic Party supporters who have also given tens of thousands, this is not small feed, tens of thousands of dollars to Democratic candidates, including Hillary Clinton. I really don't like that. So, I am on the verge of beginning to revise my opinion on this special counsel because the special counsel would play out only if the special counsel was completely above board, completely unconflicted, and completely set on one thing. Find the truth in these various matters and bring the perps, if there are any legitimate perps, to justice. Whether it's Ben Rhodes, Barry Obama, Donald Trump, Hillary Clinton, I don't care. But I want it to be fair, I want it to be even, I want it to be extensive and inclusive. Without bias, either ongoing or preconceived. And my confidence in the process has now been shaken. Because A, B, C, and D, which I just went over with you, are big revelations. And they make me very uneasy. Okay, that brings us to the pension part of the show, which I promised you last week. First of all, there is a reason that pensions and retirement plans are kind of starting to fold left and right. There is a reason that the pension insurance program of the United States is shelling out hundreds of millions of dollars a year to try and prop up failed or failing pension plans. Those reasons apply not only to these pension plans, but to retirement accounts of any type, particularly any type of retirement account you may be involved in, which is managed by a third party and not yourself. And the lessons, I might add, that we're going to go over here for the next 10 or 15 minutes, the lessons can be applied to your personal management of your personal retirement account. So number one, pensions are going broke around the country because they are overly optimistic. Pensions rely on a projected rate of return into the future to justify the fact that they're going to fund all their pension liabilities. That is, the money they got to pay out monthly or annually, whatever it is, to all those retired employees that the pension has covered. Employees, by the way, who have shelled in terrific amounts of money to have a pension, which in most cases have been matched by the entity they work for. Government, companies, whatever it is. So first of all, pensions are being overly optimistic on their projections. They're saying, okay, everything's cool. We can fund all these retirees because we're going to have a return of 8% a year. Well, the average return on pensions has been 2 to 3% a year under Barry Obama's reign, his economic reign of terror. And there's very few pensions, very few, that are meeting their projected annual income quotas. Which means, if those quotas are what they need to break even, i.e. they got 100,000 retirees, and if they're going to fund them all and wind up at zero, this is what they need to make each year in interest or investments or whatever they're putting the pensioners' money in until they retire, then there's going to be a problem. It's kind of like musical chairs. You don't want to be the last bunch of pensioners in the fund because there may be no money for your pension. There was an article in the New York Times, and this is going to be particularly apropos as I go through this segment. And this talks about a little government office, 6 employees in a county in California. The Citrus Pest Control District number 2. And they got uneasy about having all their money in CalPERS, which is the California State Pension System, which is in horrible shape, along with Illinois, New York, the other blue states. And by the way, some red states too. They found out when they went to switch over to a 401k system, which they could run themselves, they found out it was going to cost them $500,000 of the money they thought they had salted away for their pensions to do that switchover. By the way, in the end, they did it anyway. That's how uneasy they are about the state pension system out there. That should say something. The reason was, now listen to this, CalPERS, the California State Pension System, we find out that CalPERS has 2 logarithms, if you will. Number 1, they have the logarithm which projects out, like I was just talking about, an annual return on their investment of hundreds and hundreds, maybe billions of dollars in California. But if you want to get out of the system, they ditch that. That's no longer applicable if you want to get out of the system. Now they use the opportunity cost of money, which means your dollar is worth less today, less tomorrow than it is today. And so the money you have in the pension fund is discounted. To make a long story short, and I'm not trying to get in the weeds here, but it's actually an important concept to know just for life and finance. The discount rate is the rate that's applied to future dollars relative to the value of current dollars. I mean, let's face it. If you're standing on a street corner and your name is Joe and Sally comes up to you and says, hey, Joe, I'm going to give you a choice. I'm going to give you a dollar today or 1 year from now at this exact time, I'm going to give you $1.25. You just meet me here on the street corner to get your $1.25 1 year from now at this exact time. If you're Joe, what are you going to do? You going to take the dollar from Sally right now? Or are you going to say, cool, I'm going to put it on my calendar. I'll meet you 1 year from today at exactly this time so I can make an extra quarter. Obviously, you're going to take the dollar now. Because the dollar now is worth way more, way, 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 way more than the promise of a dollar plus some in a year. The difference between what today's dollar is worth, the dollar that you take if you're Joe, and the $1.25 or whatever, 1 year and 1 day from now, at the exact same time, is the discount rate. It is the rate at which people discount the future value of money. So, obviously, any money that is promised to you in the future is more risky than the money that is given to you today. And you're really talking about the exchange rate, if you will, between future dollars and current dollars, the discount rate. Remember that the longer you have to wait to get paid, the less that promise to pay you is worth to you today. Period. There's no exception to that rule. And the higher the discount rate that you apply, the lower you're valuing the future dollar. The higher the discount, the lower the value of future money. Now, back to our poor six people at Citrus Pest Control District number 2. So CalPERS, you're going to love this, right? I mean, all for one and one for all. We're here to help you. We're from the government, and by God, we're here to help you. And how we're going to help you, Citrus Pest Control District number 6, we're going to discount the money you can take out of our system to go on your own because you're taking future dollars or you're taking current dollars based on a future equation because we published that we were making 8% a year, but we haven't been. Huh. We haven't been making that kind of money. So our future dollars are worth less, and therefore you're going to get less, and we don't care what you paid in, because we're discounting it all. You want your money today, we're discounting it because you're not taking it in the future. So these poor six people in this little county office, who really had a brilliant financial idea for themselves and their families, who have worked, in some cases, I guess more than 20 years, to build up their pension nest egg, got whacked for $500,000 by the California pension system under this convoluted theory. That kind of tells you how desperate pensions are. You know, the second thing that drives pension funds underwater is they don't ask for enough contributions to the fund. Because they don't want to piss off the union, they don't want to lose union members if it's a union related fund. You know, they don't want to lose votes if it's a government pension. I mean, you don't want your friggin' bureaucrats voting against you, then they won't be part of the deep state. So instead of asking for a dollar, I'm taking a number, a dollar of every paycheck, which you need to have to break even, and you know it. You ask for 75 cents and tell the folks what a great deal they're getting. Yeah, they're getting a great deal. They get the vote in about 20 elections, and then when they go to get their check, it ain't there for them. The third reason that these pension funds are going under is terrible management. And we're going to talk a little bit about that in the case of the Dallas Police pension, which just went under. Terrible management. In very risky investments that neither you nor I, even if we were risk takers, would put the most of the eggs in our basket into. But these pensions who make these bad investments, you see, they're already behind the eight ball. They've already projected out that they're going to make, I'll take a number, 8% a year, and they've only been making 1%. Now, you know, when you're dealing with hundreds of millions of dollars of other people's money, it belongs to the pensioners, not to the fund. And for 10 years, you've been down 7% on your projected income. That means that your pension fund is, that's 100% different. It's more than 100% difference. At 6%, money doubles or halves every 6 years. Pretty phenomenal. At 6%, money doubles or halves in 6 years. If you put $10 in the bank at 6% interest, which is compound, then your money will double in 6 years. If you have an expense, which is 6% of your $10, in 6 years you'll have $5. I mean, the effect of compounding is immense. Therefore, the effect of not making 80% of your projections on income as a pension fund over 10 years, particularly with all the zeros at the end of the numbers, is phenomenal. And it affects millions of people across the United States. The same is true in privately managed funds at universities or companies or whatever. And the same is true, I'm sure, of people who manage their own funds. They make a projection, they need so much money for retirement, they don't make the projection, they start doing stupid stuff. I mean, it's really that easy. Let me give you another example. So, Barry Obama and his progressive henchmen, you know, whipped up this climate change fabrication. I'm not saying there's not climate change. I'm not saying that man hasn't contributed to climate change. What I am saying is the science is not settled, period. That the science that is out there has been, to a large degree, falsified. Google it up. Look under climate change fraud, fraudulent climate change science, fraudulent climate change reports. This is by noted publications. And you will see what those on the alt-left have done with information which doesn't suit their fancy. They've twisted it or omitted it. But climate change, folks, has to do with fossil fuels. What Barry Obama and crew tried to do was to force the market to be distorted. They tried to force pensions to divest themselves of fossil fuel stocks and investments to invest in highly subsidized alternative energy fuels. And many of these outfits did. Fortunately, many of them did not. Here are some startling figures. If pensions divested themselves of their fossil fuel investments, their stock in Mobil, Exxon, or Chesapeake Drilling, or whatever it happens to be, it would cost them, over the next 50 years, $5 trillion in pension fund income. And guess who's going to take it in the shorts? The folks who are putting money with these outfits based on a projected rate of return, and sitting back unknowing, believing they were going to get funded, they were going to get their pensions funded, and then come to find out the money's not there because you invested in alternative energy companies. You want to see an interesting statistic? Google up bankruptcies, alternative energy companies. Google up profits, alternative energy companies. You'll see bankruptcies are rather high and profits are rather low, which means stock value doesn't increase, which means pensions can't get their money. They can't get their return. Now, if you do the same thing for oil, for fossil fuel companies, even with the downturn over the last 2 years, which is now in reverse, it's now reversing. Even with a downturn, you'll see a different set of stats. The study was done by a guy by the name of Fischel, F-I-S-C-H-E. He was formerly the dean of the University of Chicago Law School, a climate change advocate, by the way. And as much as he tried to fudge the study, the results are black and white. Black and white. By the way, the only thing he studied was moving away from fossil fuel investments by just 11. I'm not making this up. Just 11 of the major public pension funds in the United States, if they moved away from their fossil fuel investments, they would have a $5 trillion shortfall in funding the pensions of the people who have contributed to the fund over the next 50 years. That is unbelievable money. Unbelievable money. Let me read you something. The study, which calculated the effects that divestments would have on the nation's largest state pension fund, guess who that is? Oh, it's our friend at CalPERS. You know, CalPERS that screwed poor little pest control district number 6. And all the major funds for New York City, Chicago, and San Francisco found that the portfolios, including fossil fuel stocks, outperformed divested portfolios annually. Quote, these annual losses add up to a 23% reduction in the value of a divested portfolio over a 50-year period, unquote. In other words, folks, would you like your pension fund or your managed 401k or whatever you happen to have, would you like them to invest in a solar company and you get 23% less pension? Decades down the road, or would you like them to keep their stock in Mobile Exxon and you get the same monthly check that you expect to get when you retire? But you answer that question. Now, and I'm trying to stay out of the weeds. Hopefully I'm doing a decent job of that for you. The California Public Employees Retirement, you know, because Jerry Brown's a nut. And he controls all that crap out there. So they are a pension fund which is selling all their fossil fuels and oil and all this stuff and buying all this, you know, wind and solar and blah, 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 and algae and whatever. You know. Right. Good old Jerry Brown. He's also, and I'm not going to get to it tonight, though I promised you last week I would, so we'll have to move that promise to next week. He's also the same moron in the same moronic state who has now passed, it is now law, a single-payer system that will cost the state $400 billion a year, and they have no source of revenue for it. Single-payer health care, including for illegal aliens, $400 billion a year. This is a guy who is directing, or should we say, has heavy influence on the folks that are running the CalPERS pension system, which is divesting itself from fossil fuel stocks at the risk and detriment of their pensioners. Lovely. Let me read to you. The report estimates that the California Public Employees Retirement System, CalPERS, fund would lose between $210 million to $289 million annually. This is not over a long period of time. This is a quarter of a billion dollars average annually by going the Jerry Brown, oh, let's be green and save the planet, woo, 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 route. Over 50 years, CalPERS alone, would lose $2.3 to $3.1 trillion dollars. How would you like to be working for the California state system? I know you wouldn't like it if you were in pest control district number 6, but how would you like to be working for the California state government and have them making these decisions with your future retirement? I bet you would be happy. I bet, in fact, that you wouldn't even know, because where the hell are you going to hear about it except right here on the right side? Let's talk about the New York Teamsters Pension Fund. Okay, this has to do with the fourth reason pensions are going under, and that is there's less and less employees contributing to a pension system. In other words, and this is also what's happening with Social Security, right? You have more and more people who have retired getting pensions, or more and more people getting Social Security, and less people paying in. In the case of union pensions, there are less and less union workers, even for governments. So there's less and less contributors to a pension fund. In the meantime, all those guys who contributed for the last 20 or 30 years when unions were rocking and rolling are now retired or retiring and expecting their monthly check. So the New York Teamsters Pension Fund, it's local, to be exact, if you want to look it up, Teamsters Road Carriers Local 707 Pension Fund has run out of money, folks. They are broke. Zero. Nada. No money. They also committed some of these other errors we've talked about. But the main thing they had was too few people contributing, and they didn't have the cojones to raise the contribution rate. The Pension Guarantee Corporation, it's called PBGC. That is the government corporation. It's kind of like the FDIC insures your bank accounts. These guys insure pension funds. They've stepped in. And you go, oh, great, a safety net. Oh, well, don't get too friggin' excited yet. Because the 4,000 retired truckers in this union local 707, they have found out that that federal agency has limited liquidity and is, I quote, part of the spiraling U.S. pension crisis that threatens to wipe out the retirement savings of millions of America, unquote. For those of you who don't believe it, Google up Pensions, New York Daily News. Anyway, by the way, they just went belly up last month. The PBGC, the federal guys that insure this stuff, stepped in. They are already supporting 70 other bankrupt union pensions over the past few years. 70. This is now 71. This is the effect on a personal level to somebody who is retired. The average 707, Union 707, Local 707 retiree was getting and was supposed to get and was counting on, and his family was counting on, $1,313 a month from the Union Pension Fund. Obviously, during the months it was broke, they got nothing. Then PBGC stepped in, the Federal Guarantee Outfit, and now they are getting their money. Unfortunately, it's not $1,313, folks. It's $570. That is a 60% reduction over what these people have been getting, what they contributed to, what they expect to get, and what they and their families have planned on. You don't want to be in that situation, do you? I don't think so. The PBGC itself, by the way, and this is according to Tom Reeder, its director, has about a decade, that's about 10 years, give or take. And this is, if no big pensions go under, then it's like way worse. Has a decade's worth of cash left. Quote, we will quote the director of the PBGC. We're projected to run out of money in 8 to 10 years. Many union pension plans are projected to run out in 20 years. There are going to be people in plans who run out of money after we do, and there will be no water in the well. Unquote. How did you happy about this, folks? Right. By the way, the PBGC, who had built up assets when things were going okay, you know, when math wasn't catching up to all these outfits like it is now, thank you, Barry, and all the people before him, had built up $2 billion in assets to guarantee these pension funds. Last year, that we don't have the numbers yet for this year, PBGC was supporting just 65 bankrupt pensions. It's now up to 71. It was paying out $113 million a month, and that's at the greatly reduced pension benefits like I just gave an example of. Local 707, the folks, the 4,000 poor truckers in Local 707 pension fund that we were talking about, cost PBGC $1.7 million a month, even at $570 checks per person. Let me continue with what the director of the PBG says. Quote, Retirees could expect to see their benefits slashed by 80%. In other words, less than one-eighth of the $570 average check PBGC is able to give local 707 retirees now. In other words, if the PBGC runs out of money, folks, and you just heard the director say, as long as they don't have any more outfits that they have to support, and you've heard me explain that there's going to be a lot more outfits they have to support, then those poor people in local 707 getting $570 a month instead of $1,313 a month are going to see their $570 a month cut by 80%. In other words, the $1,313 check that they paid for, expected, planned on, and counted on will be reduced, it's unbelievable, to about $160 a month. I don't think you want to be there, do you? You're going to love this kicker. 707, Teamster 707, and other pension boards, including Teamster pension boards, attempted to submit plans that would have cut benefits, which would have prolonged a higher level of benefits for the retirees in the plan. In other words, if we cut our benefits now, we can all take more benefits than the worst case for a longer period of time. Agreed to by the pensioners, the people getting the money, agreed to by the pension funds, recommended by the unions and the companies and the states and all that stuff. And they submitted those plans to the Obama administration, who universally rejected them. Period. No, we won't let you change. Remember I was telling you about that at the beginning of the show? Quote, the Obama administration was in denial about the necessity of cutting pension benefits under the Multi-Employer Pension Reform Act of 2014 to try and put distressed multi-employer plans on sounder financial footings and make them more sustainable. Huh. And by the way, they did that. They kept it out of Congress. They kept it out of the press, which, of course, the mainstream media was all the more happy to collude with them on. And instead, they did it by directive, secret directive, to the Treasury Department, who has to approve all this type of stuff. The deep state at work. Now, remember, this PBGC outfit, they got 8 to 10 years if they don't get any more pension funds. Well, there's a whole bunch of pension funds in trouble, and a lot of them with a lot more pensioners than the 4,000 local 707. In fact, there's two other Teamster locals, just talking about the Teamsters, 641 and 560 in New Jersey, and 35,000 Teamster members upstate in New York that are part of the New York State Teamsters Pension Fund. And they are almost belly up. Here, PBGC, you got more coming at you. But that's not, as Paul Harvey would say, now the rest of the story. Bigger than all those pension funds combined that I've been talking about is the Central States Pension Fund. A looming disaster. 407,000 retirees across the Midwest and South. And there's more than that in many industries, through many unions, and in many governments. It is a huge problem. Let me give you another case study. This has to go back to when you made bad investments trying to get yourself out of a crack that you didn't want anybody to know about. This is the Dallas Police Pension. 9,000 cops on it. And a very lucrative pension for which they paid in a hell of a lot of money. There's some perks in there that you don't find in other pensions because these people put their line on the life every day, and this was agreed to, and I agree with it. They could retire at age 55, number one. Much different than other pensions. That pension fund went bust back in September of 2016. I mentioned it at the time. You can listen to that show, but not in this detail. So the 9,000 current and former police officers, firefighters, etc., and their families who are depending on their pension benefits, ain't happening. And the only thing that can bail them out, because the PBGC can only bail them out partially, is the city of Dallas itself. The taxpayers of Dallas are going to have to come up with $600 million. That's a lot of dough, folks. Particularly distributed over this small percentage of the population that pays taxes to begin with. To get these people even close to the retirement benefits that they expected for years of laying their lives on the line for the people of Dallas. This pension fund was invested in tech and other stuff. And in the 1990s, that whole bubble, the tech bubble, burst. And their projected rate of return, remember we were talking about that at the beginning here of the segment, was 8.5%. Bonds were only paying 2%. Stocks were in the tank. They had lost a bunch of money on stuff and evidently didn't have the patience or experience to know, hold on to it and it'll get better. Don't you wish you owned those tech stocks today? Amazon at 1,000, blah, blah, blah. Apple at 1,000. So they ditched all that stuff. They went into alternative investments. Now, I don't know who decided on these alternative investments, but desperate people do desperate things. And I guess desperate pension fund managers do desperate pension fund manager things. So, here are some of the assets they went into after they lost their butts on tech stocks and sold them. Some of those stocks would now be $1,000 a share. They owned interest in the American Idol production company. They owned luxury homes in Hawaii. They owned a vineyard in Napa, California. And they owned a whole bunch of timberland in, of all places, guess, bet you can't guess, Uruguay. What a great idea. What a great idea. Obviously, all these investments are illiquid. You can't sell a house in Hawaii, particularly in 2008, 2009, quickly or even know what it's going to bring. It's not like selling a stock. You call up your broker and you say, sell. I don't know how you sell or who you sell forest land in Uruguay to. I mean, that's unbelievable. And so this pension fund went belly up. And 9,000 cops and firemen have been materially adversely affected. They've only been bailed out partially. And the taxpayers of their city are going to have to come up with close to $1 billion. To make things right, and that's just a Band-Aid. That kind of give you an idea of what's been going on? So, this isn't meant to frighten you. This isn't meant to drive you crazy. This is meant to keep you up at night. This is meant to make you smart. You know the red flags to look for. Check out your funds. Check out your pension funds. In some cases, I'm not a financial advisor. Don't listen to me. Talk to somebody way smarter than this Wyoming hayseed. Some of you who have the option might want to take your pension funds in a lump sum early. They will be discounted. Remember I told you about the discount rate. But on the other hand, a discounted dollar in your pocket today might be worth far more than no dollar or a completely reduced, remember Local 707, 80% reduced dollar in your pocket someday in the future. That's a decision for you and your family. You are now advised. I will have more on this, by the way, in future shows I will be keeping you up to date because this is a looming and rapidly expanding crisis, and no one is talking about it, at least in layman's terms, that any normal human being can understand, particularly us irredeemable deplorables, because, you know, we don't have any brains anyway. All right. Now, Britain and Muslims. I have done a million shows on civilizational jihad, the Muslim Brotherhood, etc., etc., etc. I have given you my theories on Barack Obama creating or allowing the crisis in Syria and the Mideast to fester and go out of control, for him taking specific steps like taking out the Libyan government and not replacing it, so it's now a terror enclave, which is driving even more refugees out of the area, and on and on and on, because he wanted the refugee crisis, and he didn't care about the 500,000 people who died, and the tens of thousands of women who were mutilated, assaulted, pressed into sexual slavery, or the kids crucified and burned in cages. He didn't care, because that's not his ideology. His ideology is the spread of Islam and the spread of alt-left governmental practice. It is the unholy alliance of Islam and the left. And I've talked about that a lot. Put that stuff in the search bar and you can listen to the shows. And I was talking about it long, long, long before anyone, period, anyone, was talking about it years ago, and now it's all coming true. Unfortunately, that's one I really wish I'd been wrong on. Now, if you don't want the United States to be the victim of civilizational jihad, of the Muslim Trojan horse, under the white paper plan of the Muslim Brotherhood discovered by the FBI in a raid on a home in New Jersey in 2003, if you don't want us to be like Britain now, then, you know, I would shelve the concerns you have, the heart-wrenchings that you feel when the mainstream media goes through tens of thousands of yards of film to find three images that will evoke your sympathy when it comes to refugees. And I put on your thinking hat as an American, and I think about yourself, your country, your constitution, your values, your freedoms, your kids, and your children's children. Because here's what we have in Britain today. And this is civilizational jihad. The mayor of London is Muslim. The mayor of Birmingham is Muslim. The mayor of Leeds is Muslim. The mayor of Blackburn is Muslim. The mayor of Sheffield is Muslim. The mayor of Oxford is Muslim. The mayor of Luton is Muslim. The mayor of Oldham is Muslim. The mayor of Rochdale is Muslim. I'm just giving you the major towns, folks. And if you remember, London and Birmingham were the scenes of terror attacks. So I guess voting in a Muslim mayor doesn't do you much good if you're trying to stay safe. There are 3,000 Muslim mosques in Britain. Remember that Britain is a fraction of the size of the United States, with a population of approximately 56 million people. 3,000 mosques. The mosques, by the way, in the white papers of the Muslim Brotherhood, in their outline for civilizational jihad, are what's called the centralized beehives of activity. It is the point at which people are radicalized, Sharia law is spread, and more Muslims are recruited. Look it up. It's all out there for you if you want to open your eyes, you lefties. There are 130 Muslim Sharia courts. English law? What's that? The Sharia courts. And Sharia courts have as much say in the matters they decide as a British court. That's, how would you like to have a Sharia Supreme Court in the United States? That would make you happy, maybe? There are 50 Muslim Sharia councils. In other words, cities within cities, communities within communities, who pay no attention to what the city council of XYZ city says. They simply govern themselves. And if there's a dispute, they go to their own court. This is in Britain. This is in France. Same thing going on there. Or Italy. Same thing going on there. I'm not sure the Italians care. They just drink more wine. This is Britain. There are numerous, hundreds of Muslim-only no-go areas across Britain. In other words, you are not allowed in a certain area if you are not Muslim. Never mind that you're a British citizen, and this is Britain, you're not allowed to go there. They have their own Muslim council and their own Muslim Sharia court. And you ain't welcome. 78% of the Muslim women in Britain do not work and are living on free benefits and housing provided by the British government, i.e. the other British people who were stupid enough to allow this civilizational Islamic Trojan horse in their country to begin with. 78%. Muslim men, 63% don't work and are getting all their free benefits and housing, again, courtesy of the British people. Muslim families, the average family of Muslim immigrants produces 6 to 8 children, 300% more than the average British family. Gee, let's do the math on this for 30 or 40 years from now. Maybe there'll be 130 British courts and 3,000 Sharia courts. What do you think? By the way, the average 6 to 8 children of the average British Muslim family are living on free benefits and housing paid for by the rest of the British folks. And all schools in the United Kingdom now can only serve and only serve halal meat. In other words, the meat that the Quran allows Muslims to eat. All schools. By the way, the number of Muslims, and I misstated, is 66 million people in Britain, not 56 million. The number of Muslims in that country right now who have affected these really rather remarkable changes is 4 million. 4 million out of 66 million have made this structural change in English society, finance, and law. Okay. Say what you wish, but I think it's pretty clear. And you know, I'm kind of running out of time here, so I'm going to give you a teaser for next week, and then I'm going to go over it with you. There's a guy by the name of Dennis Montgomery. This was uncovered by Sarah Carter, by the way. Dennis Montgomery was in the FBI and in charge of intelligence gathering. And he has become increasingly agitated over the past years under the Obama administration and Comey's rule of the FBI with what he considered to be Fourth Amendment infringements, First Amendment infringements, violations of the Constitution, and illegal surveillance and unmasking of American citizens ongoing and increasing exponentially. That includes financials, phone records, taxes, you name it. There's a whole bunch of people in on this illegal conspiracy in the deep state. And he took 47 hard drives from FBI computers. 47, folks. Kind of makes Snowden's deal look like, you know, child's play. Took 47 of these, and he didn't go to the press. He went to Congress. And he went to court. And he was actually given limited immunity. Remember all the people who are leaking, saying they're being patriots, they're leaking stuff to the New York Times and all this stuff? No. There is a mechanism under which a leaker becomes a whistleblower, somebody trying to do something patriotic. And that is not by giving it to the New York Times. That is by following the channels carefully, I'm sure, and going to your higher-ups. Anyway, he was given limited immunity. He has sued the FBI and Comey. The mainstream media is not talking about this at all. It just happened June 13th. For all this illegal stuff, he gave the stuff to James Comey. This is the real teaser. And Comey promised, which Comey appeared shocked, and he promised to investigate and bring it to a conclusion. This guy went quote-unquote public with it, i.e. to other channels and the court, and got his limited immunity. When he found out that Comey not only didn't investigate it, he deep-sixed it. He deep-sixed the investigation. So now you understand, with all this stuff happening in a week, Mueller, Comey, Montgomery's revelations, why I'm kind of standing back here thinking about what my original supposition was on the special counsel. We're going to go into more detail on this next week. It is shocking. It is shocking. And I wonder what Mueller's doing about this. But we are out of time. And next week I'm also going to go over these oil price deals, what's going to be happening with oil prices. You'll find it fascinating, particularly the macroeconomics over the next few years. And a whole bunch of other stuff, which I'm sure is going to arise between now and then, because that's the times we live in. Who was it? Was it Charles Dickens? I forget. May you live in interesting times. Well, that we do, folks. That we do. A happy Father's Day to all you dads out there. And a congratulation to all you sons out there who have great dads. Enjoy tomorrow. This is Reed Lance Rosenthal on the Right Side Radio. We'll talk to you next week.
Please remember, if you've missed any shows, just click on Show Archive and you'll find all of his shows. We look forward to seeing you here again next week for another episode of Reed Lance Rosenthal on the Right Side.